Welcome to the Whiskey Congress. Honest, open talk dedicated to speaking the truth to those who are open to hearing it. Black, white, right, left. Most importantly, honest, bold, and fueled by good whiskey. In Whiskey Veritas, we are Whiskey Congress. Join the evolution.
Whiskey Congress is back in session. Steve and I are together in the Cleveland studios. Been a wild week. How you doing, man?
You know, wild week is right. And, you know, it's just, you know, jumping right into it. Trump and these election challenges, man, I mean, it is, it's getting to a scary point, right? I mean, and the reason why I say that is not because it's scary because they may succeed, but it's scary what they're doing, right? Like, so what they're doing, Trump and his administration and his lawyers, by, you know, putting out these claims of fraud, right? They filed 31 various different lawsuits, or 32 various different lawsuits, and they're 1 in 31 in those lawsuits. So what that means is that they're going to court and they're losing, and they're getting thrown out in early stages by judges that were appointed
by Trump,
right? I mean, and depending on where they are, or I'm sorry, not appointed by Trump, but by Republican, you know, like Republican leaning judges and conservative leaning judges that you would assume would, at least if they weren't Trump supporters, would be,
sympathetic
to the, to the cause. And so, but yet, they're getting thrown out of court, and they're literally being laughed out of court in some instances. I mean, we've got court filings where they made these claims, right, where they made challenges in counties, right, that Trump won by large percentages, and the counties were in the wrong state. So in Michigan and Minnesota, like, they mixed up.
Wait, what?
So they filed in Michigan, but they used counties from Minnesota, and the counties that they used in Minnesota, Trump won by, you know, 15 right. points, 20 points, 5 points, whatever it might be, right? And completely, and the judge is like, okay, so these counties aren't Michigan counties, so what are you trying to do here? And it's just like, oh, okay, well, you know, we mixed it up. And it's just like, you can't, like, okay, well, this has to go. There's no standing here. And so, sorry, it's, you know, and you know, even Rudy Giuliani, I mean, you know, we'll talk about his, I mean, like, I think that should probably be up here just right. based on, I mean, it's all together, yep. right? Rudy Giuliani just continues to just completely, like, not only embarrass himself, but I think he's embarrassing himself. He's doing irreparable harm to his own legacy, if that matters. I think he's doing harm to, you know, the bench and representation, what it is to be a lawyer, what it is to be attorney, to be an attorney. Rudy Giuliani went into court, okay? He went into court, and you know what one of his arguments were, or was for some of the, you know, the people that were supposed to witness?
Right.
He said, he used the argument from My Cousin Vinny.
No.
He used the argument from My Cousin Vinny, right? The argument where they're just like, oh, the guy was too far away, so there's no way he could have actually, you know, witnessed the crime or been a part of the crime or whatever.
Did he actually march a tape measure out with a ballot?
No, he didn't do that. But he used the same argument, he referenced the movie, right, in court. Like, well, Giuliani, what the fuck? Like,
well, you've seen My Cousin Vinny. Don't you think that...
If you are a person who believes this idea that Trump lost because of fraud, because of fraudulent votes, because, you know, the ballots were manipulated, if you believe that, then you should be demanding that the Trump administration provide proof in court. And the reason why it has to happen in court, because in our society, in our democratic criminal justice, civil justice system, we've said, listen, If you have that strong of a claim, it needs to be proven in court. And once it's proven in court, then it will be rectified, right? And in this particular instance, you would get, you would have another vote, or you know, like you would have a recount. All these various, sure. You know, there's various ways to cure the particular injury that you're claiming, but you have to have evidence, right? And if you don't have evidence of it, and I'm sorry that public opinion isn't enough to change an election, but it's not. You can be as upset about the election as you want to be, whether you are pissed about 2016 and you're a Hillary person, or it's 2020 and you're pissed about Trump. The reality is that if you don't think that, you know, Hillary got a fair shake because of Russia or whatever, you know, sorry, you lose, right? Hillary has gone away, Hillary has gone after the fact and said, oh, it was because of Russia, blah, blah, blah. But she just said it in a statement. She didn't, you know, she didn't take it to court where she didn't have evidence or proof of it.
And one thing that is not getting said enough, because I've heard so many people on the Trump side say, well, this is no different than the Democrats who didn't accept the 2016 election.
It's completely different. It is completely different. And the reason why it's different is because, again, like, one, you had a peaceful transfer of power. Obama and his team didn't do anything to stop Trump from transitioning into the White House. Two, and this, you know why? You know why we know that? Because in Trump's inauguration speech, he actually said, they've made it very easy for me. They've made it so that, you know, we've been accepted in the White House, blah, 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 yada, yada. Obama acknowledged it and waved and was very statesman about it. And the other reason why this is different is because Hillary and the Democrats didn't challenge this in court. Now, if you want to say the whole impeachment process, that's different, right? Yeah, it's 100% different, right? Because one, the president was already in power for an extended period of time, and whether you like the impeachment or not, there was evidence there. There were multiple people who were talking to Russians, who were working with Russians, right? Like, I mean, people who went to Paul Manafort's in jail, right? And he's not in jail because he bought ostrich jeans and a snakeskin vest. Right, I mean, it's just some of the stuff that he was doing for Trump and with the campaign and the fraud and the lie and the lying and everything else. Right, Roger Stone guilty, same thing. You know, you also had Papadopoulos and you had the other Flynn? Guy that start no not well. There's Flynn, but you had Papadopoulos and there was another guy that wasn't even working with the Trump campaign, right? The whole reason that the federal government ended up looking at the other guy whose name is escaping me right now was because he was openly talking about his willingness to work with the Russians to do whatever he could to climb the ranks and get money, right? And then he was talking to other countries, specifically Australia, right? And then the guy got hired by the Trump campaign, right? And he's, you know, he's being surveilled and everything else, and that's where all this shit came from. So you can get as mad as you want to about, you know, the Democrats impeaching Trump, but Trump surrounded himself with shady people who were doing shady shit, right? Now, it ended up not going anywhere, and most of that had to do with the Senate being Republican, and they just didn't want to cater to the Democrats, but that's different than what's going on here, right? They're making public claims about fraud, but then they're going to court under oath, and they're saying, like, Rudy Giuliani was specifically asked by a judge, is this case about fraud? And Rudy Giuliani's exact words were, no. Okay? No, this is not a fraud case. That's what he said. Right. Those are Rudy Giuliani's words. I'm not making it up. I'm not putting words into his mouth. Rudy Giuliani was asked by a judge in court under oath, is this about fraud? No.
Right. But then he walks outside of the courtroom.
Yes.
And it's fraud, fraud, fraud. This is the most crooked election. And things that are not getting said enough. This is the same process that got Trump elected. They've been in power for 4 years. So if this process became super corrupt, it happened under your watch. Period.
Well, I mean, yes, it happened. Well, kind of not really. I mean, listen.
It's a state-by-state thing, I get.
It's a state-by-state thing, and I don't think the process became super corrupt. I mean, the argument would be this is the process that got you elected. And because you lost, now you don't like it.
Right.
Right? Like, so the reality is, like, whether you're, like, if you're a Trump supporter or you're Trump in the administration or whatever, like, right, like, their claims initially in 2016 were, oh, well, it was all the illegal Mexicans, right?
Right. But that was their claim about why he lost the popular vote.
Yes.
No one, he obviously, he won the Electoral College, no right. fight there. But and now, there's no now, fight by the Democrat now, over that.
To Trump's credit, he did, you know, start a special group to look into election fraud, and that group investigated, you know, immigrants and illegal voting and all that stuff. And you know what they came up with? Not
Jack
a
shit.
Goddamn thing. Exactly. Not a thing. Like, so it was investigated by a bipartisan group, right, led by Republicans who were full-fledged Trump supporters, and they came back with nothing. Like, your people, the people that are on your team, that are supportive, that are loyal to Trump, right, that will do anything that he asks, came back and said, yeah, we dug. We couldn't even make anything up. There's nothing there.
So I want to go back to the Minnesota counties getting asked to handle stuff in Michigan. Yeah. I'm guessing they do that because they're hoping that they found a friendly judge. They're hoping, okay, we know we can't.
Jim.
Just incompetence?
That is complete. You can't do it. You can't do it because you completely loot. Like, the thing, there's no, like.
No jurisdiction, right?
Right. Like, you can't, like, I can't go to court in Ohio. Right, and make claims about something that happened in Pennsylvania. You know what the judge says? This is Pennsylvania. What the fuck are you doing in my courtroom?
Right,
right.
But that's why they would attempt it. I assume is to try to find a friendly space.
No. You're overthinking this. It is bad legal work. It is bad legal. Like then if they're doing that,
I understand.
Bad if legal they're work. If they're doing that, then they don't have a base level understanding of how the court system works.
Which for a lawyer, I think would be considered a flaw.
Little bit, right? Okay. I mean, it's like the Ryan Hollins basketball scouting report. Ryan Hollins is a guy who played in the Cavs, and you know he's 6'9", 6'10", and if you read his report, his highlights were he was really tall, he had a wingspan, he could jump through the roof, but he lacked basketball skills, right? And so it's just like as a guy going into the NBA, you're just like, I don't know if I want him to lack basketball skills. So for an attorney.
Lacking
right?
legal skills.
You know, dresses great, has really nice handwriting, but lacks understanding of legal process and precedent. Like, those are bad things.
So, before we get too deep into the Rudy thing, I want to talk quickly about Christopher Krebs, because that's not getting as much attention as I think it deserves. Christopher Krebs was the chief cybersecurity
yes.
guy who was fired by Trump shortly after the election. My understanding was because he was trying really hard to get false information about the election caught by their algorithms.
Well,
or caught and exposed.
Yeah, and I don't know about that. What I do know is that Krebs came out and said, look, the election was secure, right? Like, this is my job. I'm head of cybersecurity, Homeland Security, and the election was secure. There was no fraud. Nobody got in from, you know, people tried, you know, whether it was China, Russia, Iran, whoever, they tried, but they didn't get in. The race was secure. That's that. Trump got pissed because right before that, Trump said it was fraud and there was cheating and there was all this other stuff and it wasn't secure and the machines and everything else and the systems and blaming all these things. And then Krebs comes out and says, no, that's not true. It was secure. Trump being Trump. Well, screw you. You disagree with me. You're fired. Now, in terms of the information, I don't know.
Right? I read that somewhere that he was,
yeah.
That was one of those things, but okay.
And maybe, but I mean, I think even without getting that deep, you still have the fact, you know, we do know that, you know, Trump said all the things, you know, all these various iterations of fraud, and Krebs came out and said, yeah, no. And, you know, the next thing you know, the guy is fired.
Yep.
Right.
And he also came out and said Rudy Giuliani's speech was the most dangerous hour and 45 minutes in, I don't know what hyperbolic thing he said in recent years, whatever. But now he's free. You can't fire him twice.
Right.
And came out and said, Rudy, what the fuck?
Yeah. And that's the frustrating thing is that, I mean, listen, you have people, you know, it's just like anyone who is fired from the Trump administration who comes out and says, listen, man, these guys are trying to do something that is unconstitutional, illegal, immoral, whatever it might be. And then the people who follow Trump will say, well, that person is deep state, right?
Right.
If you don't fall in lockstep, then you must be deep state, right? Like, and so they'll go and make some they'll try to draw some tangent, like, well, he was at a party once and shook hands with a Saudi prince who donated money to Hillary, deep state.
Right.
Right. Like, I mean, it's like, got him. It's un-fucking-believable.
It's really tough to argue with someone who is completely just gives no fucks about reality. Well, you shouldn't
be. I mean, and the reality is that I've stopped arguing with people about these things, right? Like, if we can't have a baseline understanding of, like, truth and fact and reality, and, like, this happened. I can prove what I'm saying happened. You can't prove what you're saying happened, right? Like, you got the people that are saying, well, this is all setting in motion, everything with the coronavirus and the election. This is all setting in motion, this whole thing where they're going to put people in concentration camps if they don't take the vaccine, and then they're going to wipe away everybody's debt, but then they're going to take away all your freedom, and they're going to force you to, you know, work in these camps and blah, blah, blah. It's like, look, you have no proof or evidence of that. You have some guy down the street who said it, or some guy on YouTube who said it, who, you know, shows you some doctored video, right, or some bullshit documents that anyone can literally, like, right. We've all got computers, we've all got Word, we've all got, you know, Adobe, right? Like, yep. So anyone can put this shit together, and I'm like, I saw it on YouTube, it's got to be real.
Right, I saw it on YouTube, right. Or I saw it on ExposeTheDeepState.com, like, they're not biased,
real videos, right? Yeah, they're like, someone took a camera and recorded two people talking, right? I mean, the big thing is, the Trump administration has sworn affidavits of people who, you know, will say that they saw voter fraud, right? Right? Now, the thing is, some of those people have been called into court, right? The guy, one of the guys was called into court, and I believe in Michigan, and then under oath, once he said he was under oath, under the perjury, you know, under the perjury, penalty, sure. You know, and then he's just like, yeah, no, nah, I'm not, not saying that.
But even, in terms of election meddling, if I heard this correctly, Wayne County, Michigan, which is where Detroit is, which went heavily for Biden, would not certify its votes for several days because two Republicans and two Democrats couldn't get along. And I've heard that
No. Two Republicans said they wouldn't certify. It wasn't okay. Because they couldn't get along. Okay. Said they wouldn't certify because they had questions about election fraud, meddling process, and all that other stuff. And so they said they wouldn't certify. They receive a fair amount of pressure from both Republican and Democrats. Like, listen, you're not doing this. You're either carrying water for Trump, you know, just because you have questions doesn't mean that you don't certify. You need evidence and proof not to certify election. You can't just throw out claims with no evidence, not backing it up, and then not certify an election. So then there was also the race factor. So you're either doing it because of Trump, or you're doing it because of race, or both. Either way, not legit. So they changed their mind. Then Trump calls them after they've certified, though, and then they want to change their mind. Like, oh well, we don't want to do it. And it's just like, look, now you don't get a chance, because it's clear that this is political and it's not based off of evidence or proof or anything. It's strictly about appeasing Donald Trump, and it's not about actual fraud or actual improprieties, right. with voting.
So to me, Trump making that phone call is an indicator of just how fucking crazy this is, because he's calling a local election board, you know, someone that certifies local elections,
yeah,
a president of the United States, on the phone with them.
Right.
Fucking insane. And yet, I have not been arguing with people. I've been trying to ask them questions and throwing in some smug responses, of course, when I do it. What I'm seeing people say they genuinely believe. They genuinely believe this election was fixed. They genuinely believe Trump is going to prevail in this. And when they don't, who knows what happens? Now, you called me earlier in the week and told me something that you thought was, you were hoping I would tell you was crazy. And why you chose me as a voice of reason, that's kind of on you, man. But you literally said, like, what are the odds that this guy tries to literally take over using the military?
Well, hold on. Like, there's a process to get there, right? Like, so what I'm saying is Trump has gone through and fired multiple people in leadership positions in, you know, Homeland Security, the Pentagon, Secretary of Defense, a lot of, you know, undersecretaries, yep, and various things. So, and then he has replaced them with people who have pledged essentially this, you know, unwavering loyalty to him.
Right.
Okay. So on the one hand, you could say, well, Trump is Trump. He doesn't like anyone who disagrees with him. And in his last stand, Trump being petty is just deciding, I'm going to fire you and screw with your benefits, or screw, you know, I want to sully your name. If I can't get reelected, then screw you. You're fired. Which he has the right to do, but the question is why, and because it leaves it leaves some national security risk with some of the people that you're firing. The Secretary of Defense, for God's sakes, you're definitely creating a possible security risk by, you know, leaving this gap and then filling it with someone who's really unfamiliar with this, you know, the various things that that person is dealing with, that leadership role is dealing with. So it could just be Trump being Trump and Trump being petty. The other issue is, though, you know, there's a thing about pulling out with Afghanistan, and I think that's probably the big thing, right? Like, this is probably about Trump just wanting to pull the troops, every guy out of Afghanistan and saying, look, I told you I was going to get everybody out of the Middle East. I've done it. And, you know, I won the election, but, you know, the votes didn't say that I did, and the Electoral College didn't say I did, but they cheated. But I did what I said I was going to do, and I got everybody out of Afghanistan. Now, why would our Secretary of Defense and people like that not be down with that? Well, because pulling the remaining people out, does it possibly put the people that are still there, right? The people that, you know, the United States was helping and protecting, right, and training, does it put them at risk for various insurgents? And does it, you know, does ISIS all of a sudden climb out of, you know, the hole that they've been put in, and, you know, other groups, and do you have this power vacuum, and then all of a sudden there's not peace in the Middle East anymore because you've just sucked away?
Well, there's not peace in the Middle East.
No, right. Well, exactly. I mean, it's just, I mean, or does it destabilize, right, the region even more
or create,
because of this?
Or create future terrorists who are going to hate the United States, right, because we left them high and dry.
Right. I mean, we've been down this road before, so I think people are just like, all right, we need to, as much as we would love to be completely out of there, we have to do this in a slow process to make sure that it's fair for the people that are, right, there when we're gone, and to make sure that we can do it safely for our own troops, because you make this a big announcement that we're leaving, and all of a sudden it could make our guys targets, right? So that's probably the biggest reason why he's wiping people out, so there's no one to stop him from doing that. But if you play it out one step further, let's say that Trump is able to get one of these states to not certify. Well, technically, you can still have the transfer of power, but does Trump then say, well, since you have this one state or even this one county that didn't certify, technically, the election results don't count, and therefore, I'm still in power, and I believe that the best thing for the country is for me to stay in power, because we can't have a transition of power that's under question. So I am declaring that I am still president, and that we'll need some time to sort this out. But, you know, when January 21st comes, I'm not transitioning power to Joe Biden. And if you have a problem with it, I have the military here, and I am demanding that the military deploy out into Chicago, New York, basically any place with a lot of black people, and that, you know, they use deadly force if necessary.
Which would be martial law.
Which would be a coup.
A coup, yeah. Well, I mean, a year ago, if either of us had used that word, I would have said, okay, that's too far.
Right.
I still think, well, first of all, I forget who, I think
it's Aaron. I still think it's too far. I think that my imagination ran a little bit, and I don't think that that's where we're going. I think a lot of this is about Trump trying to dig in and get some last things done. I think he's just, he's drumming up noise because he's a shitty loser, in terms of he doesn't like to lose and he doesn't do it well. Not that he's a shitty person who is a loser, but whatever.
He handles losses very badly.
I do think there's some financial things here. I think that he's trying to drum up support. And I originally thought that he wanted to take over OAN. I really think that that may not be the case anymore. I think he may want to be able to buy into Newsmax, which is a relatively new media outlet that is just flooded with, you know, former Trump staff members that stayed loyal and various people that have spoken out for, you know, on Trump's behalf. You know, both Sarah Huckabee Sanders and Mike Huckabee are there. Who else? Corey Lewandowski is regularly on Newsmax. You know, just that group of people who are, you know, Trump apologists, Trump loyalists. You know, they're on this network, and so I think the move for Trump is get as much support as possible and do something financially that ties him to that network, build it out, and then that's kind of his legacy going out. I don't think you see him running again in 2024 just because of age, even though we're, you know, we're
about to swear in a guy about who's to
swear
about that
in age a, swear in a guy who is the age Trump would be in 2024. So, you know, I won't completely dismiss it, but I think a lot of this has to do with money. And the reality is that, like, listen, Trump isn't liquid when it comes to money. Yes, he's a billionaire on paper, and it's just like, oh, well, you're not a billionaire on anything. That's true.
That's true.
But Trump is a billionaire on paper, and if Trump got his debts called right now, like, he would be assed out, right? Like, he would lose a shit ton. Like, he would, yeah. Like, his wealth would diminish greatly, as anyone who has debt, right? But, I mean, he's just got, you know, billions of
dollars. $400 million in debt that we know of.
Well, I mean, it's more than that. Looking at his taxes, it's definitely more than $400 million. I mean, he owes one particular party $400 million. But, like, if his total debt were called, it would probably cut his net worth in half, if not more. And his businesses aren't a lot. Most of his businesses aren't profitable, right? Like, and this is, again, this is not me guessing. This isn't me making claims. This is public information that you can find out, right? And part of it is like, listen, I'm a real estate developer. It's what I do. I do what Trump does. Like, his businesses are built on developing real estate. I develop real estate. Now, I do it with the overlay of affordability, and tax credits and everything else. So what I do has a little bit more nuance to it. But here's the deal. When you look at his deals and the way that they're put together, his deals are put together and they're modeled assuming the assumptions that are used in the underwriting process are that best case scenarios, right? That if it's an apartment, tenant building or whatever, that it's going to have 100% occupancy. Or if it's a hotel with commercial retail space, that it's going to maximize that commercial space. It's going to, you know, everything right. is going to be leased, and if they lease parking spaces or sell parking spaces, every single one is going to be leased and whatever. And that's not true, right? Like, there's no building, like when you go to develop, whether it's apartments or an office building or whatever it is, you always assume that you're going to have a vacancy rate of 3%, 7%, 10%, 5%, whatever it is, right? You never build into a project where you're taking on debt and equity that there's going to be 100% occupancy or you're going to maximize profit. Like, it's just like no one puts a deal together that way, right? And so when you assume that at some point in time you're going to have vacancies, right, then you have a realistic picture of kind of what this deal is going to look like and how it can produce money, what your debt coverage ratio is going to be, and how that all works, right? When you look at Trump's deals, right, with Deutsche Bank, right, like they just assumed the question is really more on the bank. Why would you make these assumptions, right? There's no possible way that once you calculate in the necessary vacancy rate and some of the various things that could go wrong and all this other stuff, and then you do the necessary adjustments, there's no way that this was going to be profitable. You should have known that from the beginning. So these deals are designed, right, not to be profitable. Right? There's no way, because you just can't make those assumptions. And so the question is, well, why would any bank do that? Because ultimately, right, they're able to write it off as a loss, right? And then the bank themselves get a tax write-off because they're like, listen, this is a bad loan. It's not doing us any good. We're losing money. So it's a write-off at the end during tax season, which for banks is huge, right? Which is why they invest in my business of affordability, because they buy the tax credits that we win from the state, right? Like, so his deals are not designed to be profitable. They're designed to lose money. They're designed to be able to get bailed out by tax credits and tax loopholes in the back end. And he's able to survive off that.
Is that illegal?
No, it's not illegal. It's not illegal. And I'm not claiming that that's criminal. But what I'm saying is he needs money, right? Because now he's going into the tail end. If these debts get called, he needs a way to produce profit. Right. And if you own a media network, listen, you're getting TV commercial money, right? Like these news, whether it's CNN, Fox, MSNBC, even OAN, right? It doesn't matter what they put out. People just want to consume it, right? They want to hear. That's why they're all biased and they're all shooting for a narrative, because certain people want to hear certain things. If you watch Fox and you listen to Fox, you want to hear all, you know, all Republican, all everything about Republicans and everything about conservatism, everything about Trump is great, right? You listen to MSNBC, you want to hear that Trump is the devil and that everything about being progressive and democratic and you know, criminal justice reform, blah, blah, blah. Like, that's what you want to hear, right? Newsmax is all Trump. OAN is all Trump. So Trump wants in on that. He gets in on that. He cashes in. He makes money. Right, where his other businesses are not profitable, this for him, in his mind and in their mind, they believe it should be. Now, will it be? I don't know, but I think that that's the play.
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with money, and when we heard that the campaign was struggling for money at the end, you mentioned something a couple shows back about people just, I think it was on the show, maybe it was just us talking, but people just literally illegally spending campaign donation money, and now, you know, the chickens are coming home to roost, as they say. And I also wonder, does Trump believe that he will face criminal prosecution, whether it's at the federal level or in New York, once he's out of office? And you don't ask the question, can I pardon myself, if you're not thinking about that. And I wonder, is he a desperate
I don't think he feels like a desperate cornered animal. I think that Trump believes in his own head, and I think there's a little bit of truth to this, that he doesn't necessarily believe that he committed a crime. I don't think he believes he's committed any crimes, and I think he believes that he's covered. But what I do believe is that he thinks that the state of New York is after him because they don't like him, and they treat him very badly, and they treat him very poorly, and Cuomo's out to get him, and the attorney general is out to get him, and the state, everybody's out to get him, so they're going to, pun completely intended, trump up charges that he's going to have to deal with. Now, the thing is, he's asking about pardoning himself. I don't believe federal crimes are coming. I don't think Biden's going to let him get charged. I think Biden's going to look out for him, because ultimately, old rich white guys look out for old rich white guys. That's just what they do, right? And I don't care what Biden says. Biden is not going to, on a federal level, allow anyone to go after Trump, right? Trump didn't go after Hillary, right? He talked a lot of shit, but ultimately there were no charges or anything brought against Hillary. Just a lot of bullshit about Benghazi and everything else. Okay, fine. But ultimately there was they never went after Hillary like they said they did. And listen, the Clintons have done some questionable things.
That is fair to say.
Okay, the Clintons have done plenty of questionable things that are worth a look, right? But no one's gone after them. Why? Because when you're at that level, those people aren't going to go after each other. They're not going to cannibalize themselves. Biden's not going to go after Trump. Now, state of New York, they don't give a fuck. They may, right? And I think Trump realizes this. Now, in his mind, he believes that they just treat him poorly and they don't like him and that he's a victim, because Trump is one of the most victimized billionaires, according to him, that you'll ever hear of, right? But I don't think he believes he's really in a bad situation. I think he thinks that he can get out of it. He can skate it. I don't even know if I necessarily disagree with him. Do I think he's done some criminal shit? Yes, I do. Do I think he's going to ultimately pay for it? No, I don't.
You know, and I actually don't think that's a bad thing, in the sense that if you have an outgoing president suddenly get attacked legally by the incoming administration, that's what happens in Venezuela. That's what happens in unstable republics. So as much as I do not like Trump, I don't necessarily want to see a break out the magnifying glass and get down to this. Having said that, I think there's a lot of people who've done a lot of illegal shit under his administration, and I don't think those folks will get protected. And I frankly don't want them to.
I think ultimately they will. I think that's how our political system works, and I think that that's what pisses off a lot of people.
The protected class, so to speak.
The protected class, right? Like if you're just an average Joe, like you see these people, like you know they come. Now the issue is, right? The people who get most pissed off about this are typically, you know, conservative Republicans, and the Democrats get away with murder and everything else. But now they're going to be really quiet about, you know, people who've committed crimes, right? Like, I mean, they're literally going to ignore or just flat out lie. I mean, we've already been able to show, like, I mean, people are still defending Brad Parscale, right? I mean, and it's just like this, like, are you serious? Have you seen the video? Have you seen what this guy was doing? And they'll still defend him. So it shows the hypocrisy. It shows, at the end of the day, people just want to see, they want to hear things that they believe in, that they support. They want to see those things magnified and they want everyone else to kind of fall in line. And when they don't, they're just willing to turn a blind eye and say, well, that doesn't apply to me.
And one thing I want to say from the beginning of this conversation, because I don't think this gets said enough, is I think there's a huge misperception out there that just because a judge was appointed by a Republican or a Democrat, that they are going to follow in the party line. That's the whole point of the judicial system, and there are legal checks on them. So if a judge gets out there and says, yes, we're declaring Wayne County doesn't count, there's going to be professional repercussions for him down the road.
Well, you're right, but the problem is that there's so many people that have been willing to bend the rules, ignore precedent, ignore policy. Like, there's so many things that have gone on with the Attorney General in the Department of Justice, right? Like, the Department, the Department of Justice literally was just booted from a case. You know why? Because they were representing Trump, the individual Donald J. Trump, in a court case against a woman, against an individual, right? Against a woman who had made, they're making claims against this woman. And the judge is like, you are the Department of Justice. You are not Donald Trump's personal lawyers.
Right?
Like, get the fuck out of here. What are you doing? Like, Donald Trump can afford, according to him, he can afford his own lawyers. There's no reason, right? There's no reason for William Barr in the Department of Justice to be representing Donald Trump in court over a personal issue. But, like, I never would have thought I would have been having this conversation, you know, a year ago, 2 years ago, 4 years ago, that the Department of Justice was representing the president on a personal case, right? And the Attorney General saying, well, there's nothing that says I can't, there's no explicit rule saying that I can't do this, so why can't we?
It's one of those things there, we don't need to worry about banning this. I mean, there's no law against throwing,
but William Barr actually came out and said, there's no explicit rule that says we can't do it, that we can't represent the president of the United States in a personal matter, right? And the fact that you think, as the Attorney General, that that's appropriate, and the fact that we even have to address it, and it had to be addressed by a judge in court, like, that's scary shit. Like, and I have been the biggest person trying to downplay some of the dramatic, accusations and the conspiracy theories and everything else. Like, from day one, I told you back in 2015 that Trump probably was going to get elected. A lot of the stuff we were able to call out, eventually we were able to figure out the pattern, jingle the keys, make some noise, then they do this on the back end, right? Like, none of it has been all that bad. And then all of a sudden, right, like, you see him kind of back into the corner. And what I mean by that is he's in a position where he's going to lose power and authority, and he's acting out like a petulant child. And then there are people around him who are doing things that are also in a position of power who are actively doing things that are hurting our democracy.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, the stuff that Trump is doing is what he's saying and what he's doing on Twitter. Like, okay, I can ignore that. Because ultimately it's not policy. Right.
Fair.
Trump running his yap on Twitter isn't policy. William Barr saying, I can represent the president of the United States as the attorney general through the Department of Justice in a personal matter, that is fucking with policy. That is fucking with our democracy. That is fucking with our republic. That is fucking with how our government is stabilized. Like, you those are the sort of things, right, that seriously bother me and that seriously worry me about what they're doing. You know, going through and firing people in a position, you know, the Secretary of Defense and the head of cybersecurity, literally exposing our country, by taking people away from a post because of, if it's just over you being petty, whether it's over you being petty or you want a coup or anything in between, right? Those are things that hurt our country. Those are the things that put us at risk that we can't be quiet about.
Right, and one of the biggest, I mean, we talk about terrorism in this country all the time. We've obviously been attacked multiple times. We've had a few pretty significant cyber attacks. Most of them affected personal private companies, yeah, and stuff like that. The Sony attack being a classic example. But
no, I mean, you just had a healthcare attack had a cyber attack that impacted multiple insurance companies and multiple hospitals that completely shut their systems down. Right? I mean, like, they didn't have access to patient records. They didn't have access to medications. Like, I mean, like, this was dangerous. And it was classified as a cyber attack that came from outside the country.
Okay. And chopping up the people in charge of that, who I didn't know who Christopher Krebs was until he got fired, which that's on me, but I'm guessing most of America didn't know who he was either. Everything I've read about him says he was about as apolitical as you can get. And he was just really passionate about...
I mean, and that's the other thing. Trump wants loyalists. He wants people loyal to him. Now, to be fair, Obama was similar. Obama wanted loyalists as well. But obviously, he wasn't nearly as bombastic about it.
That's an apples to oranges, in my opinion.
It is. I mean, but, I mean, like, listen, we need to be fully transparent. We need to be fair. I'm not saying that they were the same. I'm not saying, but Obama wanted loyalists around him. And there were people who were fired from positions because... there were issues with whistleblowers with Obama. There were issues with the media with Obama. There was a lot of Obama wanted everything kept in house. He wanted everything very quiet. He did some things like that. Administration did some things that were questionable, but ultimately it fixed their problem, right? Like, you didn't have leaks. You didn't have that sort of thing. They reconciled their relationship with the media to a degree, and then they moved on. And they did that early on during the first term, got elected to a second term, and it wasn't an issue. Trump, on the other hand, like you said, completely different. But I mean, it's just like we just need to be intellectually honest. And sometimes I think you and other people, you get so blinded by your disdain for Trump that you're willing to sweep shit under the rug just because you want to highlight your disdain for Trump. And I don't think that's intellectually responsible.
Okay, well, I think I do stay intellectually honest. If you can, we can debate this next time we're hanging out. And if you come up with an example, we'll talk about them on the show. But I don't want to do a back and forth here. Continuing on with this whole thing, Georgia has certified their election. Joe Biden has won the state of Georgia. Lindsey Graham apparently tried to meddle in the certification of Georgia's election. I don't know exactly what he did. I think I just got to what I read basically was he was basically just trying to strong arm people into holding off on declaring. And that is, well, first of all, Lindsey Graham's from South Carolina, not Georgia. So why the fuck is he even there? Even
calling?
And what a fucking weaselly little lapdog. Lindsey Graham is almost past Mitch McConnell on my list of disdain because he was John McCain's, sidekick forever. John McCain dies, and he starts licking Trump's boots with a veracity that is absolutely stunning to me. And Georgia is obviously a critical state right now because there are two Senate seats in Georgia that will get decided in January and determine the balance of the Senate. One thing I don't know the answer to, though, is so there's two independents in the Senate right now. King from Maine, Angus King, I think, and Bernie Sanders. Why the fuck don't they just say, we're Democrats again? That gets us to 50. In the interest of getting Mitch McConnell the fuck out of power, we're doing that. They could, right? You can change your party affiliation after an election. It's been done.
Yeah, they could, but they don't want to. I mean, if they're claiming to be independent, then let them be independent.
It's their choice. It's their right. They got elected that way. I'm fine with it. But I can't believe that someone like Biden can't go to them and say,
Okay, here's a perfect example. If I came to you, right? Like, we're not even talking about the Senate. Hey, Jim, I think it's a bad idea if you vote for Jill Stein or Gary McFuckballs or whoever you wanted Johnson. To fucking vote for. It's a bad idea if you do that. Probably a good idea to vote for Hillary. Just hold your nose and vote for Hillary. You got all indignant about it up until the very last second, right? So if I put you in the Senate and you're an independent and I come in, you need to be a Democrat now. You're going to tell No, come on.
Perfect impersonation of me, by the way. You nailed it.
Your eyes would roll back in your head with your, fuck you, you're not going to tell me what to do. I'm an independent and I'm staying this way. Come on. Jim, voting for Gary Johnson is a bad idea. Vote for Hillary.
And what did I do?
And,
I voted for Hillary.
And you basically told me, fuck off, blah, 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 blah. Last second, you changed your mind.
I changed my mind last second.
Last second, but correct. There was a lot of,
yes.
Gary Johnson has some good ideas, and yes, blah, blah, blah.
Yes, like, yes there okay, was. No, yeah.
Gary Johnson was a fucking moron. Tell me he wasn't.
No, he's not a moron.
Oh.
Gary, he said some stupid shit, I'll grant you that. I've said plenty of stupid shit, you've said plenty of stupid shit.
Okay. All right, listen.
If the only thing that got broadcast by the media was me at my worst, you would think I could barely tie my shoes.
That wasn't the only thing that was broadcast. Come on. Where's Gary Johnson right now? What's he doing?
I think he's still the CEO of a Cannabis Sativa. Okay. So he runs a pod company.
Okay.
He's on the board. Maybe he's not the CEO. Anyway, George is going to become very critical. And you made an interesting argument to me the other day that... you can make it again, or I can try to paraphrase it for you, and you can jump in if you like. You want it or me?
About what?
Trump. If Trump refuses to go to Georgia because Georgia just certified the election against him, and then therefore doesn't bring the Trump power to the Georgia elections.
Right. I mean, so there's a thing, right? Like, so Trump being Trump. Trump has been asked by multiple Republican officials, like, "Hey, you need to get to Georgia, and you need to support the Republican Senate candidates." Because, you know, I mean, like, there's going to be another vote. There's going to be, you know, there's a recount. It's too close. You need to get down there and you need to support the Republic. Screw that, right? Trump is not going down there. He's refusing to do it. He's pissed at the state of Georgia because they certified an election that they came in and they did an audit, right? They didn't just recount the votes. They did an audit, right? Where they go through and they look at signatures and they do all that sort of stuff, right? Like, so, and it still comes out for Biden. So Trump's pissed at them, and he's pissed at the state, so he's just rattling off at the governor, rattling off at the secretary of state, rattling off at the mayor of Atlanta because she's a black woman, and she doesn't like him, so he's got to let her know that he doesn't like her. And the reality is that if the two Republicans lose and the Democrats win, then now, right... You have
50 Democrats,
right? You've got and the deciding vote is Kamala Harris,
correct?
Right. So now you've got Biden as president. You've got a Democratic Senate and a Democratic Congress, right? But what about this? What if the ultimate Hail Mary of all Hail Marys happens?
You brought that up just to piss me off.
And Trump somehow is able to get the election overturned. Ends up in the White House, but you've got a Democratic Senate and a Democratic Congress. And he's then in the White House. What do you think happens?
He gets impeached in a heartbeat.
Right. I mean,
and I think for legitimate reasons. Like, the whole impeach this guy because he sucks, that's not how it works. I think Trump committed, he was impeached. I think he committed removable acts. And if the House and the Senate were both Democratic, it would be a rough, it won't be a rough 4 years. It'll be a rough however many weeks it takes for that to happen.
Right. I mean, so I just think it would be like the ultimate irony if that were to go down that way. But I mean, I don't foresee it.
I don't either.
I mean, ultimately, I think. You probably end up with maybe one of the I can't believe that Georgia's gonna that Loeffler just drew as much support as she did. I mean, you know, she's such like these it cracks me up how people vote against their interest so consistently, both Democrat and Republican. But like if you're a blue collar truck driving, you know, middle class person. You know, like your total household makes, you know, $70,000-$80,000 a year. You got a couple kids. You're working. Your butt off, right. And blah blah blah. And you're making ends meet, but it's a struggle. It's not a struggle, but at the same time, you're definitely not a billionaire or a millionaire or multiple hundreds of thousands of dollars. And you're screaming and yelling about supporting a person who. You know, has, you know, who is an heiress and married rich and worth all this money and then did some really shitty insider trading, you know, and then, you know, was able to skate for it. While the other guy who did the exact same thing that she did because he wasn't as rich and no one liked him as much and apparently he wasn't as attractive ends up basically being indicted and carted out in handcuffs. But yet, that's the person that you're going to support. But yet, you know, like, you think that she can relate to you. You think that she wouldn't fucking step on your face and piss on you to get you out of the way. Get the, like, it cracks me up.
It, but there's so many examples of it. Right. And Trump is the prime one.
Right. I mean, and now, I mean, you can make some arguments about, you know, the way a lot of people have voted Democrat and some of the people that they're voting for. Like, Nancy Pelosi, really? Like, she's the, you know, feminist champion of the working modern woman. Get the fuck out of here, right? Like, I mean, come on. She's, right. We don't have to dive into that. But, I mean, like, listen, Georgia, I kind of underplayed it, I guess, initially, like, the last couple of weeks, because I didn't really think about it. I was really more focused on, you know, what the hell Trump was doing challenging the election. But all of a sudden, if you do have a Democratic-controlled White House, a Democratically-controlled Senate, and a Democratically-controlled Congress, even with, not quite the stronghold they had, then they'll be able to push a lot of things through early on. That's a little bit concerning for me because I don't know if I fully trust the Democrats with full control of everything. And I thought having a Republican Senate was a check. So we'll see how this plays out because all of a sudden, and the reason why it scares me is like most of the progressive Democratic agenda I don't really give a shit about. I am a big, we've talked about this the last few weeks. I'm a huge Second Amendment advocate. I don't think it needs to be touched or changed. I don't care about your sensible gun laws. There's no sensible gun laws. You either have gun restrictions or you don't. And any sort of gun restriction, I believe, is an infringement on the Second Amendment. But, like, I think that's the most dangerous thing to me in terms of Democrats and what they're bringing to the table.
And I don't think, even if the Democrats have 51 votes in the Senate, I don't think there will be, I'm confident that there will be no risk to gun laws. There are too many Democratic senators from states where if you do that shit, you're done, and people know it. As much as I hate the NRA, and I will continue to call them the scumbags that they are, there's so many pro-gun Democrats in Congress from states like Nevada.
I don't disagree with you, but I it's hard to tell, like, after watching the Republicans or Trump, and just seeing how spineless people in both the Senate and the Congress were, what they were willing to accept, what they were willing to not accept, what they were willing to let the president get away with, let him say unchecked, no, nothing, right? Like, refuse to say anything until they're literally out of, you know, out until they've retired or they've been voted out. Do we really think the Democrats are that much better than the Republicans? I think they're all a bunch of spineless liars, and so I don't trust them. Like, I get what you're saying. I just don't trust them.
Okay. I'm going to go back to Obama and say 8 years ago, he had the House, the Senate, and the White House, and on a federal level, there were no impact to gun laws, period, other than allowing them in national parks and on Amtrak. So the only thing that Obama did when he had the power to do all those things, and
yeah, but NRA Obama never. Obama said, "Listen, I'm looking for sensible gun laws here. School shootings are terrible. Let's do something about it." He never got into specifics. He never dug into the weeds. Joe Biden. My issue is Joe Biden's talking. I mean, Joe Biden has hired Beto O'Rourke's, I think, campaign manager, or one of Beto O'Rourke's campaign somebody's, okay, and put them in a position of power, and this person has come out and said that they believe that, you know, there should be mandatory buybacks of certain types of guns, and gun confiscation and registration and all these sort of things that they just worry me, right? Okay. And then if Beto O'Rourke is put in that administration in any sort of role, and his job is to deal with gun laws, one, you're banging your head on a wall. like I said, no stud finder. And two, I think we have a problem with the Second Amendment, and I don't like it.
We can resume this when this happens, because we'll have to work out the details of the headbanging.
There's no details. You're going to walk up to that wall. And you're gonna put
I get to choose the wall.
It's that wall. We both pointed at that wall, and it's all you don't choose.
I don't think that. You know what? I'm going to call my lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, to represent me in this case.
Okay. Well, then he'll have you banging your head on a brick wall outside. So go ahead.
With some weird shit running down the side of his face.
Okay, so I don't know. Like, I don't know how many of you guys saw it, but there's a video out there of Rudy Giuliani, and he's got, like, it literally looks like he's melting. but ultimately, it's hair dye that's dripping down his face, and I don't have the audio, but there's audio of, like, people saying, like, you know, like there's
a hot mic.
Okay. Right, there was a hot mic, and they're like, oh my God, Rudy's hair dye is dripping down his face. You think he knows? Right? Like, when do you think he just had it done? Like, why is it dripping like that? Is that the way it's supposed to work? Like, it's a really...
If you can find it and tweet it, that'd be great.
Yeah, I'll find the audio and tweet it out. I mean, it's just...
Have you ever seen that happen to someone before? I have not.
No.
Who do I hang around with?
Well, like, no, ever. And no. I can't think of a single personal or professional...
I've seen women get their hair dyed like in the salon and have, you know, something around, like, but I've never seen someone just
sweating enough to make it drip down the side of their face.
What the fuck did you dye your hair? What did you just take shoe polish and slick it in there? I mean, I don't know.
You're not there for your looks. Let it go, Gray. I shaved my head for a reason, dude. Do the same thing. But that was comical. And this guy's, again, this is a guy representing the President of the United States on national television.
Yep.
That's what we got.
Yep.
So
he's got fucking shoe polish melting down his face or whatever he used to dye his hair. And while this is happening, he's making claims of fraud after he just got out of court and said this is not about fraud.
It's too funny not to mention, but also if you take a step back, it's... should be just terrifying.
I don't see how you could, even if you're an average Trump supporter, like, I'd be pissed, right? I would be pissed because I put my faith in Donald Trump and he gets this clown to represent him who may have been, had the perception of a stud, you know, 9/11 and all of the stuff. And I got people from New York who say, no, he's always been a clown. But you know, to look at him then, look at him now, and then if you're a Trump supporter, why are you not, like, this is the best you could do? If you're a Trump supporter, and you're, and now maybe people are intentionally ignoring it, but I don't see how, right? Like, if you're a Trump supporter, and you look at some of the reasons why these cases are being thrown out, like, they're being, like, the judges are throwing them out because they have to, because they're so poorly put together, right? And they completely are just devoid of the legal process. Like, listen, guys, I'm sorry. Like, we gotta have rules. We gotta have rules and procedures. And if your lawyers that you're picking aren't gonna follow the rules and procedure, I don't know how you expect to succeed. Unless your argument is that, well, we don't like those rules, so they just shouldn't apply, and I should be able to bring whatever I want to bring to court, and you need to accept it, right? Like, I mean, that's just not how it works.
Trump supporters should look at Rudy Giuliani the way New York Jets fans look at Adam Gase.
Yes.
Just like, you're an embarrassment.
Utter disdain.
You're ruining our organization. You're ruining what we cheer for. Please go away and never be seen again.
Right.
But yet.
they're dug in, and I mean, it's scary. Because of the way people are digging in. But I think that a lot of people eventually are going to come back down the earth. I think most Trump supporters are never going to admit that they were wrong or that they knew that it was a lie or that they knew or whatever. They're just going to slowly transition and we're just going to pretend like that all didn't happen. Right. I mean, I think now this is they don't necessarily care whether it's true or false. Right, I don't think that they necessarily believe the fraud thing. They'll say it all day because that's the party line, right, that everybody is saying. Whether they believe it or not is a different aspect, but they'll say it out loud. But a lot of this is just to show, a lot of this is just a big middle finger to progressivism, to Democrats, to Black Lives Matter, to, you know, criminal justice, like to anything that they feel is... not MAGA, not conservative, not right. Like, I mean, like, what, you know, like all those things that they feel are heavily centered on minorities and poor people, mostly poor minorities, right? Like, this is a big, you know, and then anything LGBTQ, like, this is a big middle finger to all that. They feel that all of that is a threat to them and is a threat to our democracy and is a threat to what it is to be an American. And so they don't necessarily believe that Donald Trump was defrauded. They don't necessarily believe a lot of the bullshit, but he represented the big middle finger to all of that. So they'll support it wholeheartedly because they're against, you know, everything on the other side. So they're willing to just
ignore reality.
Ignore reality to support it.
But I disagree with you. In the sense that, I mean, obviously, anytime you try to put 70 million people into one column, you can't. But the number of people out there that I talk to that I think genuinely believe that there was mass voter fraud, Not talking about officials, not talking about, you know, people who are...
You're just talking about guy on the street.
Guy on the street. If I went to certain bars that we've both been into and asked that question around, I think I would get a 30% yes, it's complete fraud. Which, sure, it's a minority, but it's a big number of people.
Yeah, but I think, yes, you're right. And the reality is, you can probably find 5 million people that genuinely believe that there was wild voter fraud, that, you know, like that, like that there was just some lesbian black woman in a house somewhere in Detroit with 100 mail-in ballots, and she just marked them all for Biden and all the Democrats, and then she put them in a giant bucket, and then she took them and dumped them down in a box in Detroit somewhere, right? Like, I guarantee you there are probably 1 million, maybe 5 million people that believe that.
Oh, but it's way more than that.
It's probably not. Like, the reality, like, I mean, you're just like, oh, I talk to these guys in the bar, right? But that's such a small sample size. And I mean, like, there's a lot of, but I mean, the reality is that 5 million people is a lot of people. It's the same number, but it's just a really small fraction. And I refuse, like, I don't think that that's a majority of the country, right? Like, we're thinking about, you're using the people that are barking the loudest, right?
Right.
And the people that are barking the loudest, right, don't necessarily represent a true majority or a true representation of what's going on across the country, but they are having a definite impact on how all this shit is playing out. So they shouldn't be ignored, but we have to recognize what's happening, right? You have a very underwhelming minority in terms of number that have they have way too much impact in terms of their voice and how loud their cries of ridiculousness are.
I think that number is much bigger than 1 million, 5 million, but yes, they definitely are the loudest. And just the ease with which people will sign on to stupid, though, is a concern. And we could do this for hours. I really want to talk about life in Ohio right now, because we're back under a curfew, which I don't think anyone even knows what it means. The funny thing to me is that in Ohio, bars were closed at 10 o'clock. Bars and restaurants closed at 10 o'clock, or last call was 10 o'clock. You had to be out by 11. Governor DeWine comes out and says, we're making new announcements, and I jokingly at a bar said he's going to move it back to 9:30, which is essentially what he did. So I was saying, like, this is the most ridiculous thing you could do, is knock another half an hour off of fun time, and that's what he did.
Yeah, I mean, so this is, look, man, the coronavirus is serious, and it's you know, people talk about, you know, the number of people dead. I mean, I would argue, just, you know, the people who got it and recovered but have long-term effects that we don't know. We talked to Ben Eves from My Whiskey Den a couple weeks ago, and his son is having lingering effects. So I don't think that we can underplay what the coronavirus is, and we can't understate just there's so many different people who are at risk, and that means something different for so many different groups. But at the same time, like, part of the problem with, you know, I think Governor DeWine is in a situation where he feels powerless. He feels he can't not do something, right? He has to do something. Even if it's ineffective, even if it ultimately probably ends up hurting more people than the coronavirus will, because what he's doing, like, if you shut down businesses, if you tell bars and restaurants to close, if you tell gyms to close, maybe you reduce the number of people who contract the virus, right? Maybe you do, and you slow it down and you tamp it down. Okay, good.
Yep.
But the reality is, now you've got people who lose jobs. You have people who lose businesses, who go bankrupt, who fall into insurmountable debt. It affects people's mental health. And I'm not talking about the people who go to the gym, who say gym is their therapy. That's bullshit, right? Like, I didn't go to the gym almost the entire lockdown, right? Part of it was because I had a fucking torn tricep.
Right.
But you know what? I still banged workouts out in my basement like it was my fucking job. Right, because for me, exercise is very critical. It helps my brain work better. It keeps me out of really long states of depression. Right, if I don't work out, I go to dark places. So I went in my basement. I did push-ups. I did step-ups on chairs. I jumped over chairs. I literally almost killed myself multiple times trying to do adventurous different shit. You know, I borrowed your kettlebell and swung that motherfucker like it was my job. I was on the treadmill nonstop. Like, if mental health is that important, you figure out a way. So I'm not saying, like, gyms need to stay open for that reason. But my gym, there are multiple people who work at that gym where the owner, if he shuts down for a month, right? Like, he can't, like, and if I lose my gym, if TJ fucking goes bankrupt and my gym closes, DeWine is going to have a whole lot of 270-pound pissed-off nigger up his ass, let me tell you, right? I'm not losing my gym over this, right? Like, you need a better solution than we just got to shut it down. And, right, and the solution is out there, right?
Well, the solution is wear your fucking mask to start, because that's right. And when I still see people not doing that, I'm going to bang my head on the wall, but I'm retiring that phrase until it's needed.
No, you could say it. I mean, we're not betting.
But it, the lack of seriousness still is amazing. And the reason I'm kind of calling it out is I think overall Mike DeWine has done his best. I think he's done what he thinks is right.
It's an impossible situation.
It is. It is. And
I mean, I don't think, listen, should you be like the governor of Florida encouraging bars and restaurants to open full-fledged, like, you know, stay up right until 2 o'clock in the morning, fuck a mask, everybody get together and hump each other's leg, and let's have, you know, all college football, get everybody back in the stadiums, right? Like, that's probably not a good idea. Let's use a little common sense, right? Like, social distancing is probably important. We need to keep that around. People, you should wear a mask, right, when you're going into a building and you're in close quarters and stuff like that. Now listen, I say that. Now, I went to the gym earlier this morning, and you got to wear a mask going in. You got to wear one coming out. You don't want to wear one in the gym. Now, here's the thing. You know, they have kept track of, you know, through contact tracing and everything else, the numbers of people who have contracted the coronavirus in gyms. And the numbers are way lower, right? Like, they're just way lower than everywhere else, right? Like, it seems like a lot of the contraction is happening in restaurants.
Small gatherings.
Yeah, small gatherings, people close together. Yeah, you know, I mean, things like that. I mean, which, so hard to fucking control, right?
Right. Well, and I want to call out Gavin Newsom, the governor of California, and Nancy Pelosi, because they were both seen at social functions, maskless, not social distancing. And I heard a lot of it on right-wing radio. It's like, these people are fucking hypocrites. Yeah, they are.
I mean, no. There's also the thing, like, listen, I'm rooting for science like a motherfucker. Like, I need these vaccines to hit the streets. I need them to work. I need them to not cause fucking crazy side effects that turn people into zombies. Like, I just that's our best bet.
Absolutely. Right?
You get a vaccine, and then you get some sort of a treatment where people get it, and it doesn't completely shut them down, and they don't have to go on a ventilator. And I think then we can get some return to normalcy.
That is, I think, the one and only way, and I think you're looking at several months before that's going to happen.
Right. I mean, we've got a couple of vaccines that look like they're relatively close. And I think because of the state of urgency, I think things are moving faster. I think everything we're hearing from Pfizer and Moderna and the administration is that they're going to start administering this stuff in January.
Here's the thing, and this is right up my alley. The concerns I have is, and I don't have any knowledge that this is going to be the case, but sometimes there's a delay in getting raw materials because you have
right, and you've expressed that before. You're probably not wrong, but at the same time, whatever they have now, they're going to start to distribute and disperse.
Right,
and that is a start, right?
Absolutely.
And I think I wonder. I don't know, and someone needs to ask this. I think ultimately, someone needs to ask DeWine or one of these governors, like, what the fuck is it going to take for you to stop with the guidance, with all these things, and what's going to stop with the restrictions, and when can we get back to normal, right? Like, what's it going to take? Do you need a certain number of people to take a vaccine? Do we just need a vaccine that's out there, that's available? Do we need a vaccine and a treatment? Do we need a vaccine to be out there and a treatment, and we need it for a certain amount of time? I mean, because I think people would at least give some people some idea of what to look for.
I understand what you're saying. The only thing I would say in to counter that is when you put on this will be over by.
No. Okay, I didn't say that. I didn't say give me an exact date when it's over. I said what are the criteria?
Okay.
What's the criteria, right? Is it we got to have a vaccine or we got to have a vaccine and a treatment? We got to have a vaccine, we got to have a treatment, we have to have a certain period of time with no side effects, or we got to have a vaccine, a treatment, a certain period of time, no side effects, and, you know, whatever. Like, what is the criteria for a return to normalcy? And I think by doing that, it will help quell some of the anxiety that people are experiencing.
Okay. We've been going on hour 10.
Okay, we gotta go.
Gotta go wrap it up. You do need to say one. You know what? No, let's just go. You want to do the Nick Chubb thing or no?
No.
All right.
No. I mean, it was a great football play, Nick Chubb. If you didn't see it last week, Nick Chubb plays for the Cleveland Browns. He had this long breakaway run. I have Nick Chubb on my fantasy team. And so it's a big 60-yard run. He's got wide open in the end zone, and then he runs out of bounds. Smart football play
with a minute to go, so you just kneel down and end the game.
Yes, and I freaked out because now ultimately I ended up winning my fantasy game, my fantasy matchup or whatever by 25 points. So it didn't matter.
The one I'm in.
No, okay. Not the one you're in. Okay. No. This is my big money league.
Oh, okay.
It mattered, but ultimately I ended up winning by a sizable amount, so it didn't matter, but I was watching that with a friend and was just beside myself, like, what the fuck? But it ended up not mattering. It was a smart football play by Nick Chubb. And actually, I love Nick Chubb as a running back. I like him a lot. He runs hard. He's a slasher. One-cut guy, and he gets upfield. He never goes backwards. He always falls forward. He's really talented. He's really strong and effective. He's quiet. He just does his job and, just grinds it out. So I love him as a football player, even though he plays for the Browns. It was a smart play by him. It annoyed me, but ultimately ended up working out. And I still got a shit ton of points because it's a 60-yard run. And we call it the League of Extremes because, we just get – our point totals are just crazy, and we have defensive players and everything else. Okay.
So I was told –
Cut me off.
Cut you off.
Okay. I want to talk.
No, I want to hear about your fantasy league. Please go on.
I'll tell you all about it.
I'm sure you will.
It's the League of Extremes.
It is the League of Extremes. Apparently, specifically, he was told by – Kevin Stefanski, the coach, in these circumstances, this is what I want you to do. So the question of whether or not he did the right thing is, yes, he did. He did what the coach told him to do. The thing that cracked me up is the number of people who lost, it affected the scoring line.
Yeah.
So there were people who were convinced that they were going to lose because the Browns weren't going to cover, see him break into the open, think, I'm in the money.
That shit matters, bro.
Listen, yeah.
If you've ever been to Vegas and you've been to a sports book and you get some sort of a parlay going or something like that, all of a sudden, shit like this matters.
I used to
do
sports gambling online, and I could go on for hours about the times that this crazy thing happened at the end of a game, but we've been going long. Thanks for listening. We are at Whiskey Congress on Instagram and Twitter. Look us up there, and we're out.